C1M, number 8A.
Now we come to the fourth subject. I will take it in the same way. The first thing we would ask ourselves, what should we wed ourselves to? And what has God joined together? And what she brings out here is that we should wed ourselves to fundamental qualities, to that which is scientifically fundamental, that we should wed ourselves to science, and that science only teaches us correctly and not to personal sense. It is here the scientific foundation which is asked as the partner of our wedding, to wed our heart to fundamental, basic, scientific groundwork, to science, and not to personal sense. If we wed ourselves science, then what is the effect of it? And she shows that such a wedding as principle, which is always showing the oneness, says it is indestructible, that it is indissoluble, that it brings an indissoluble unity. It's like welding the links of affection. And its effect as life and truth, she brings in permanency. She shows that, you see, if one has a good ear, if one has an ear like Mrs. Gibbs has for music, if one has that for metaphysics, the shades are absolutely clear. See, here, life is permanency. In mind, it was the law of life, which is civilization, constructive life, you see, civilization, because mind constructs. In spirit, life was different. It was enriching because it was the substance of life. And you see, it was enriching, enlarging. It was the substance of life. And in the third, in soul, it was the permanency of life, because soul is the stability of life. And now here, in principle, life as principle, you see, gives the permanency of it, the indestructibility of it, because the unity of principle always shows that cannot be broken. Therefore, it's permanent. And one gets a sense of permanency here, immortal unity, a unity which cannot be broken, therefore it's immortal, lives on under whatever difficulties. It's unbreakable. And the sense of truth which she gives here is now the as principle would show, namely the relationship. Principle always shows the relationship, and so it shows the relationship of men as companionship. Now, if we put all this together, it gives a wonderful sense, gives a very natural sense, shows, all right, if we unite on a scientific basis, if we unite on the basis of science instead of personal sense, that's the wedding. If we unite on that, well, that renders this unity, this unity renders permanent, because it's on science, and science is eternal. You see, it renders it permanent, and it wells a companionship which is permanent. It gives a relationship which is permanent. So this subject answers, as I would say, the question, what is necessary to have a permanent relationship. That That's what is answering. Therefore, you see quite, when you read that the fourth subject, he starts writing, well, about divorce and so on, and that something is wrong, or there wouldn't be divorce. You see, it's breaking of a relationship, and therefore the big question, well, what is necessary to have a permanent relationship? And she answers and says, all right, well, the answer to a permanent relationship is a true wedding, is a true marriage. And that is the marriage to fundamental principles. If we wed ourselves to a fundamental principle, or if we wed ourselves in a fundamental principle, then as long as we stay in that, on that basis of a principle, our friendship will be permanent. Isn't that very easy? It always boils down to something very practical and easy. It boils down the moment one can analyze the text and not mix up all the categories in it, but just analyzes it gently and purely and clearly, and then it just boils down to some fundamental law. See, here the law would say, in the measure as we wed ourselves instead to person, or wed ourselves to personal views and wishes and instincts and so on, if we wed ourselves to fundamental spiritual facts and build a relationship on this basis, that relationship will be permanent, because signs of principle never alter. That's the life sense that comes in. It's permanent, and it's permanent. It makes the companionship permanent. Now, how do we get there through the first three chapters? I wonder why I did go away for a week to prepare my notes when I have to skip them all. I think next time I don't go away. Now, let's see the rhythm of the fourth subject in the first three chapters. In prayer, the fourth subject was that prayer of being willing to take on a principled attitude, because only a principled attitude, she showed, would lead us on to life. It was asking in us a principled attitude. Well, that's fine, but this demands in Atonement and Eucharist that we give up something. Namely, that we give up, and she showed there what we have to give up, namely the counterfeit of a principled attitude. She asked us to give up a doctrinal attitude, a theological attitude, a personal attitude. It was all about that thing. So Atonement and Eucharist comes and says, you can't pray that you will go forward in your life on a principled attitude unless you give up your old theological, doctrinal, theoretical, scholastical, and common sense attitude. You have to sacrifice that. All right. In the measure, now I come to the third, you see, the transitional stage, the comparative stage. In the measure as I'm willing to do that, in the measure as I'm willing to sacrifice an unprincipled attitude for a principled attitude, in that measure, the principled attitude in me takes root, becomes larger, becomes more tangible, becomes broader, and therefore I become less personal, less personal. And so, in so doing, this has an effect. This has an effect that suddenly, in my whole being and feeling and thinking and so on, I become more scientific fundamental and no more personal. That has an effect. It has an effect that I suddenly begin to realize that I live in a universe with more steadiness and permanent relationships. Where we can see our friends after years when we are united in silence, and it is as if we had parted yesterday. We are just there again. Just there again. It wells really indissoluble links of companionship. So I can say the more I become one with principle, or a principled attitude through prayer and atonement and Eucharist, the more I become one with principle through those two chapters, the more I become inwardly basic, fundamental, and thereby bring relation, and thereby establish relationships with the universe, with the surrounding, with companions, on a much higher, much more impersonal, and much more permanent basis. It's a state which we all long for. All I can say as my contribution to the universe, see, in Christianity we always have that contribution to the universe where man begins, where one idea, see, in true Christianity, one idea contributes to the other idea. Brought down that true Christianity to the world as Christianity, we see that good qualities contribute to other qualities, that they are a contribution to the world. Here we can see that as I become one with principle, that principle brings out in me something new, a new birth, brings out in me something new, namely, it brings out in me that little germ, that little seed, which wants to be fundamental and basic and scientific, which doesn't want to be personal. And so makes me very useful stone in the universe. It makes me really to contribute towards establishing indestructible relationships. The moment I become impersonal, the moment relationships become impersonal and therefore permanent and higher, I contribute something to the universe, something very big to the universe. Could you see how through all these subjects really, man becomes a big contributor to the universe? How we become the savior to the universe, but man becomes the savior to the universe. In Christianity, we must. Now, let's go to the fifth subject. What are the qualities to which we should wed ourselves? Here, quite different qualities, quite different factors are presented. You may have noticed that in this fifth subject, the main tone is that qualities of exaltation, the qualities of refinement, the qualities of ascendancy of the good. It's not always easy to pin down the whole thing to one term, but I think you get the rhythm or the atmosphere of it. See, in the first subject it was wedding ourselves to respect for law. That's something. In the second it was wedding ourselves to affections which are pure. The main point was on purity, that it was a wedding that our affection will be pure and not impure. The third was wedding ourselves to selflessness, to mutual interest. And the fourth was wedding ourselves to fundamental basic facts. The fifth now is that it says, wed yourselves to ever higher and higher refined qualities. It is a a question of rising, of it is a question of always trying to rise higher. It is always a question which says, wed yourself to that desire to rise always higher, not to stop, not to let go, but always to renew the effect, to rise higher, to always have the higher rule the lower, to always have that ascendancy of good over evil, the ascendancy of spiritual qualities over animal qualities, and so on. The ascendancy of being heavenly-minded and not worldly-minded. It's always that ascendancy. See, it's life. Life is that exaltation, those birds which fly above the earth into the open firmament of heaven. It's that tendency to go higher and higher and higher. So, the subject life here says, wed yourselves to ever higher refined qualities. Wed yourselves to that desire that always the best you know, the highest you know, has control over you, over the situation. Wedding ourselves to that has an effect. Has an effect of life and truth, the scriptural knowledge. What is the effect? Here, life is always shown as the improvement. See another tone. Life is here shown as the improvement. It shows that if we wed ourselves to an ever improved or to an ever higher or refined quality, that has also the same effect, that it will bring out a refined, an improved effect. And so truth is here shown as the relationship of parent and child, of progeny. Have you seen that up to that point she didn't talk about the relationship of parent and children? Here's the first time, it's the fatherhood sense. See, life is the fatherhood sense. Here she depicts this. She depicts that the higher we ascend in our whole mentality, in our whole affection, the higher will be the fruit of our work, which humanly seen is parent and children, showing that the higher parents, human parents, rise in their mentality, the more refined will be the mentality and the character of the children, which really shows one thing, which I always think when mothers and fathers blame about children, I always think, well, you are to blame. Because the children are, after all, just kiddies when they come into the world. But the parents expect from these kids that they know 10 times more than they are, that they express better qualities than they have. I don't know why. Here, let's see, really, that before parents are grown up to be mature men and women, they have not fulfilled this fifth subject. And how the parents, so the children, really, she says, it is all inheritance heeded. And so she says, heavenly-minded parents, they will have also better progenies. It's all about, just let me have a few. She says, the offspring of heavenly-minded parents inherit. Inheritance is inherit more intellect, better balanced minds, sounder constitutions. See, it shows the fatherhood sense. Life is always that. We have seen that in prayer. We have seen that in Atonement and Eucharist. Life is always that which determines the relationship in quality of cause and effect. Truth is the form of the effect. But life determines the quality of the effect and says, as the cause, so the effect. So here we get that important, super important law, which really is so important in everyone's life, which says, wedding ourselves to always higher, to always more refined qualities, that if we do that and unite with these qualities, that will propagate a higher and improved human species. Improved human species. Now, let's also notice this, that in this paragraph she speaks mostly, not entirely, but mostly about parents and children. But naturally, this whole paragraph applies to any fatherhood sense. Because we are also a father to our patients. We are a father to our friends, to our comrades, to our co-workers. We are a father to the universe. We always what we have in our consciousness will always have an effect on the universe. That is true. And so this here, this subject is that subject which says, which answers the question, well, what is the effect of me on the universe? Do I help to improve the universe through what I am? Or do I expect the universe to improve without me? It shows, no, life shows there is always a fatherhood sense at work. And it says, as I am, so is the influence on the world. As the parents are, so are the children. And therefore, this subject really is applicable universally. And it says to us, all right, as we unite with always higher views on being, with refined concept of being, the more I do that, that has an effect on the universe. It cultures and refines the universe through everyone with which we come into contact. There's always a little seed which springs up, or there wouldn't be fatherhood. See, if that wouldn't be so, if that which we carry within ourselves would not have an effect on the universe, then God would not be life, would not be father. But that God is father, which means that every father has a child, or he wouldn't be a father. Which shows that every cause has an effect, which shows, as Johnny Morgan says, there is no shine without the sun, that every sun has to have a shine, or it never will be perceptible as the sun. Well, as there is that sense of life, which says, as the cause, so the effect, we begin to realize that we are really an improving influence on the universe, and that we do that the more we wed ourselves to refined qualities. Now, how does that come to happen or to be practical? How does it work and come to work and become operative in us? It becomes only operative in us if we fulfill first the first chapter and the second chapter. Can't come without that, because the Christianity always draws its power from the Christ draws always its power from the Word. So let's go through the fifth subject of the first three chapters. The first chapter showed us the proposition of that fatherhood sense. It says, If your standpoint is belief, your effect will be belief. If your standpoint is understanding, your effect will be the effect of understanding. You remember that? was that sense which says, well, what should be the cause of healing? What should be the, yes, what sort of healing do you want? Is it a healing based on belief or of understanding? If it's based on understanding, it says, then it draws everything from the Father. It draws everything from the Father. So we had that prayer, which says it must be a prayer which is clear about the point that we must go to the Father if we want to have a real effect. That belief has also an effect, but not a right effect, not a divine effect. That if we want to have a divine effect, we must go to the Father. And then comes Atonement and Eucharist and says, all right, but if you want to go to the Father in order to express the fatherhood of God and have a positive divine effect, you must sacrifice something. You must sacrifice the belief that there is any life in matter, there is any limited material mortal sense of life. We must sacrifice a false sense of fatherhood, that there is a creative living source in matter or body or in anything except God. In the measure as we sacrifice that false sense of fatherhood, and therefore in the measure as we go to God as the Father of all, in that measure, naturally, we resurrect ourselves out of a false sense of life, out of a limited, small, mortal, material sense of life, and resurrect ourselves to a refined sense of life, to a divine sense of life. And so something in us takes place which is of the nature of a refined life. We begin to feel that the refined sense and concept of life becomes predominant, has ascendancy in us. We come to be wedded, you see, to a refined sense of life. And the refined sense of life has an effect. Christianity's effect has an effect, and it shows that it has a refined effect on the universe, an improved effect on the universe. And so that it enables us to promote and help and improve and culture mankind. So I can say, as I become more and more one with life through prayer and atonement and Eucharist, that has the effect, it brings out in me a higher and a refined qualities in me. Just, it really does. It brings out more and more the higher and the refined qualities in me. And as it brings that out, this is not stagnant, it becomes the fatherhood sense of man, namely that it fathers the universe, the surrounding. It has an influence, it spreads an atmosphere which is of the same nature. Therefore, I begin to contribute. So that whole process of being willing to go through prayer and atonement and Eucharist, I become a contribution. I begin to contribute to the universe by advancing mankind, by improving the human species, by elevating and culturing and refining the human species. Be it as parents with children, be it as practitioner with patients, be it as teachers with students, be it as a friend to friends, be it as an employer to employees, whatever the relationship is.